This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky in September. The nights are drawing in now. You don't have to wait up quite so late in order to see the heavens. And there's actually quite a bit to see this month. Let's start with the stars. After sunset, fairly high overhead in the south, is that rather lovely region of the sky where you've got Cygnus the Swan, Lyra the Lyre, and Aquila the Eagle. The brightest stars of these three constellations, Deneb in Cygnus, Vega in Lyra, and Altair in Aquila, make up what's called the Summer Triangle. And I think that name might have been given to it by Sir Patrick Moore. If you have binoculars, you can start from Altair and move up towards Vega. About a third of the way along, there's a rather darker region in the sky, the Cygnus Rift. It's where there's a dust cloud obscuring quite a bit of light from the Milky Way. And in there, you find a rather nice little asterism or cluster. It's called Brocky's Cluster. And it looks a bit like an upside-down coat hanger. So it's normally called the coat hanger. Rising in the southeast, but somewhat lower down, is the constellation of Pegasus, the winged horse, the upside-down horse. I'll come to one object in Pegasus in the highlights, but you can see M31, the nearest giant galaxy to us, the galaxy in Andromeda. If you start at the top left-hand corner of the square of Pegasus, actually called Alpha Andromedae because it's actually in Andromeda, and you curve round up and to the left two stars, then turn sharp right, move one star, and then the same distance again, you should see a little hazy glow in binoculars. And if it's very dark, you can even see it with your unaided eye. That's, in fact, the great galaxy in Andromeda, M31. It's about 2.5 million light-years away, and is perhaps 20% bigger than our own Milky Way galaxy. Together, we make up the two largest galaxies in what's called our local group of galaxies. Rising in the east, with the Milky Way arching overhead, we have the constellations of Cassiopeia and Perseus. If you follow down from Cassiopeia towards Perseus, you may spot a little hazy glow with your eyes. Binoculars will just show it as two little clusters called the Perseus Double Cluster, and it's a lovely object to observe in a telescope. So quite a nice skyscape in the evenings in the latter part of the summer. Well, what about the planets? There are two planets that really are the best this month, Jupiter and also Mercury. We'll start with Jupiter. It's now rising in the east about 9 o'clock, and at magnitude -2.9 is really very obvious, and you can see it for much of the night. Obviously, it's rising gradually earlier as the month progresses, so at about 7 o'clock it rises by the beginning of October. It comes into what is called opposition on the 21st of September, and that's when it's opposite the Sun, and therefore due south around midnight UT, we must remember. So it's an excellent time to observe. It's actually well worth observing with a telescope now, because temporarily we assume it's lost its south equatorial belt. Normally you see two quite dark bands on either side of the equator, the equatorial belts, and one of those has now gone. But at the same time, what's called the Great Red Spot has become more visible. It's slightly darker than it sometimes is. So it's well worth having a look with a telescope. We'll come back to Jupiter in the highlights later on. Well, Saturn essentially is now gone from view. It passes behind the Sun on the 30th of September. You might just glimpse it very low down in the west, low to the right of Venus during the first week, but really wait for a couple of months when you can see it before dawn. Mercury, that passes behind the Sun, which is called inferior conjunction, on September the 3rd. So obviously you haven't got any chance of seeing it at all in early September. But it then comes out behind the Sun, and it actually rises quite high in the sky, and I'll come back to that in our highlight. It's actually the best time to see Mercury before dawn this year. Well, Mars and Venus are together very close in the sky. I'll come back to those again in the highlights. Mars is at magnitude about +1.5. It's very low in the southwest after sunset. The angular size at about 4 arc seconds just over means that you won't really see anything, unless, of course, you've got access to the Hubble Space Telescope, which maybe somebody has. So we'll come back to those as a pair a little bit later on. So now let's have a look at these highlights. Nothing particularly spectacular this month, but we do have a very good dawn apparition of Mercury. Now, Mercury never gets terribly far away from the Sun. I think 18 degrees is the maximum. And therefore, it tends to be lost in the pre-dawn glare or the twilight after sunset. You see it best when the ecliptic, which is basically the line of where the planets lie, is at the greatest angle to the horizon. And that happens around dawn in the autumn and around sunset in the spring. And this month, it reaches greatest elongation on the 19th. Its magnitude then is minus 0.3, so binoculars will easily pick it up. And once you've seen it in binoculars, you should be able to see it with your unaided eye. It's actually about 15 degrees above the horizon for quite a while, so there's a good chance of seeing it reasonably high in the pre-dawn sky. I've been trying to include a Messier object that's been imaged with the Fawkes telescope, taken by students at schools, largely in the UK, but also across Europe. And this time I've chosen M15, which is a globular cluster in Pegasus. If you look on a star chart, you see the head, the mane of Pegasus, arching upwards, because of course Pegasus is upside down. If you take the last two stars that make up the neck and the head, and follow upwards and a bit to the left of Delphinus, in fact towards the star Deneb, not far away you'll come across with binoculars a little fuzzy glow. And that's the globular cluster M15. A telescope, a few inches in diameter, will show the individual stars, and the brightest is in fact at magnitude plus 12.6. It's one of the oldest known clusters, and dates back to just over 13,000 million years. It's lying at a distance of 33,000 odd light years, but still shines at magnitude plus 6.4. Overall luminosity is in fact 360,000 times that of the Sun, and there's now a suspicion it has a black hole at its heart. Well worth having a look at. Well, right at the very beginning of September, Mars and Venus are very close, and between them, in fact, lies the star Spica in Virgo. There's only a few degrees between both Venus and Mars, so you'll see them nicely in a binocular field of view. On the 10th, there's a very thin crescent moon just below Spica, and on the 11th, the moon will have moved up to the left of Venus. So, if it is clear, low down in the west after sunset, a nice little view of Venus and Mars. Again, I've been trying to include a little region of the Moon to look at with a telescope, or even perhaps with binoculars. This month I've chosen Sinus Iridum, not Iridium, Sinus Iridum, which is the Bay of Rainbows. And it's a curved inlet of Oceanus Procellarum. It looks particularly nice when the terminator crosses the bay, so that the tops of the mountains to the left of the bay are in sunlight, and look rather like the backbone of a dinosaur. And according to Virtual Moon Atlas, which is a program you can download off the web, that should happen on the evening of the 18th of September. So if it's clear, it's well worth having a look. And on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, or just put night sky into Google, it should come up. I've made a little drawing just to show you what it looks like at sunrise. I'll come back to Jupiter. It's very close to Uranus, and both are within a degree of each other as they reach opposition, that's opposite the Sun, on the 21st of September. And on the night sky page, I've included a chart that shows the relative positions of Jupiter and Uranus throughout the month. Jupiter is in fact at its largest angular size that it ever gets. In fact, it's bigger than it's been since 1963, or will be again until 2022, but there's not actually an awful lot in it. The reason is that at this particular month, Jupiter is closest to the Sun in its orbit, and at the same time, during August and September, The Earth is furthest from the Sun, so the distance between the Earth and Jupiter is at an absolute minimum. Well, I've mentioned before, Jupiter's well worth going out to look at with a telescope. If you haven't got one, they're not that expensive now. Why not go out and buy one and enjoy looking at some of the lovely things we can see in the heavens?
Thanks for that, Ian. And now here's John Field to tell us what you can see in the southern night sky.
September sees the welcome return of Jupiter in our evening sky. Rising in the east after sunset appears as a very bright star. Jupiter takes approximately 12 years to complete one orbit around the Sun, and on average moves through a zodiac constellation each year. He was named after the king of the gods in Greek mythology. The stories associated with his interactions with humans are decidedly dodgy, to say the least. In Māori, Jupiter is known as either Pararau or Kopunui. In the early 1600s, Galileo pointed his telescope at Jupiter, revealing its disk and four stars that moved around the planet. Known today as the Galilean moons, these four moons range in size from 3,000 kilometers to 5,000 kilometers. The innermost Io is the most volcanically active object in the solar system. The continual gravitational tug of war with Jupiter and the other large moons stretch this moon, creating friction heating and produces the volcanic activity. Europa has the smoothest surface of all the objects in the solar system. This is likely due to an underlying ocean of water covered by a layer of ice many kilometers thick. With water and warmth, Europa may have an environment capable of sustaining life. The two outer moons appear to be frozen balls of rock and ice. Jupiter has currently 63 known moons. Jupiter turned out to be the most massive planet in our solar system. A small telescope revealed bands on the planet due to different composition cloud structures. In one of the equatorial belts can be seen the Great Red Spot, a storm 2.5 times the diameter of the Earth, and this has been observed for the last 200 years. Weighing in at 318 times the mass of the Earth, Jupiter is heavier than all the other planets in the solar system, but is still tiny compared to our star, the Sun. Venus is the evening star, appearing in the west after sunset. Mars, much fainter, is below. Vega can be found shining in the northern horizon, and the Milky Way spans our sky from north to south. Orange Antares, the scorpion's heart, is west of the zenith overhead. The scorpion's tail, the fishhook of Maui, curls towards the zenith, and the Southern Cross is lying on its side in the southwest, along with the pointers. Behind the tail of the scorpion is Sagittarius, often called the teapot due to the bright stars of this constellation resembling this very useful device. Sagittarius is sometimes seen as firing his arrow towards the scorpion to avenge Orion's death. Heading northwards along the Milky Way, we find Aquila the Eagle, with the bright star Altair, the rising one. Māori called Aquila Potutirangi Humu. Altair is the 12th brightest star in the night sky and one of the closest at 16 light years away from us. This has allowed this star to be imaged. It was discovered that Altair spins so rapidly that it is distinctly oblate. Along with Vega and Lyra and Deneb and Cygnus, they form a distinct triangular shape. In the northern hemisphere, it is known as the summer triangle, and in the southern hemisphere, the winter triangle. Canopus, the second brightest star in the night sky, is low on our southern horizon. In Greek mythology, Canopus was the navigator of King Menelaus. To Māori, it is Atutahi, the high chief of the heavens. Due to its southerly position, Canopus is circumpolar from New Zealand. Originally called Alpha Argus, it was part of the constellation the Great Ship Argus. Argus has since been split up, and now it is the brightest star in Carina, the Keel, and known as Alpha Carinae. The Hipparchus satellite revealed Canopus to be 310 light-years away, and with a mass 8.5 times that of our Sun, and an estimated brightness 15,000 times. The constellation of Carina is home to a large number of clusters. IC2602, known as the Southern Pleiades, covers a full degree of the sky and surrounds the third magnitude star, Beta Carinae. Binoculars reveal a large number of stars. Nearby is NGC 3532. Also visible to the unaided eye is a haze near the famous Eta Carinae Nebula. John Herschel considered it to be the finest cluster he had ever seen. It is a bright cluster of 150 stars covering 1 degree of the sky, twice the diameter of the moon. There's a glorious sight in binoculars. Small telescopes show small, straight and curved lines and a number of bright orange stars. NGC 2516 is another beautiful open cluster, visible to the unaided eye from a dark sky as long as the moon is absent. It once again is a glorious sight in binoculars or a small telescope where scattered groups and irregular sprays of stars can be seen. Three bright orange stars contrast well with the rest of the cluster. Close to home, the sun has begun to wake up from solar minimum and sunspots are reappearing. During August, a number of coronal mass ejections occurred that sent large numbers of charged particles out into our solar system. If these interact with the Earth's atmosphere, they can create auroral displays. Due to the northerly latitude of land in the southern hemisphere, only bright or strong auroral displays can be observed. So northern hemisphere's observers tend to see more auroral displays than us. As activity on the sun increases, we will all hopefully see more displays. Thank you very much. This is John Field from Carter Observatory, signing off for another month, and I wish you clear skies and good stargazing.